Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy.
Seriously?
Nice.
Seriously? Honestly, do you know how I decorated this studio for you for your 50th birthday? You told me you're coming in, and I brought in all the gifts that people have sent you. There's booze. There's cat bingo. There's balloons.
Cat bingo.
There's burritos from the diner.
Well,
you got some splaining to do, young man.
You're gonna have to wait for Godot for just a little while longer. I'm coming in after the show today. I had to make some adjustments in my travel schedule. So,
can we expect you on Monday?
You know what?
I don't even care if you come in on Monday. Because I'm taking the booze. I'm taking the popcorn. You can have your birthday cards. And I'm taking the balloons.
I had enough booze and balloons and cat bingo in my 40s. So, I'm pretty much set with all that anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, did you see the picture I sent you? Can people on the Matrix Home Solution, whatever we do it, Home Solution, see what we have here for you? Can you zoom out, Justin, so you can see this big party that we're having? And somebody didn't show up for the party, and his name is Dan Proft. But anyway, it's all about you today.
It's my party, and I won't show up if I don't want to.
Happy birthday.
I do see the video that you sent me. This is it's very well decorated. The Mylar balloons, too. But
nothing says happy birthday like a Mylar balloon.
It's such a nice touch. It's such a signature touch of yours, the Mylar balloon. Yeah. Really allows you to linger over the day for many days subsequent to the day.
Really never goes
so
flat.
So that's nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you have spent a considerable time in your 50s. What's it like?
Oh, my. Hey, I've aged more in the last 3 years in a lifetime. No, it's really fun. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing changed. Nothing feels different except the only thing, you feel things start shifting in your body.
Is that right?
You know, you're like Peggy Kaczynski told me that once too. She's like, someday you'll wake up, Jacobson, and your butt will start going down the back of your thighs. I'm like, well, that sounds lovely.
Okay. I haven't noticed that. You notice how people address you.
Oh.
You know, you don't look good anymore. You look good
for
your
age.
Right, yeah. Wah, wah. Or it's the you look nice. Like, oh, look, he was able to dress himself and show up. Sort of that.
He doesn't have
any
crumbs on his shirt. Way to go.
There's no absolute standard. It's just relative standard. But for those of you who did have the under 50 in the Deadpool, I'm sorry to inform you. That's a losing bet.
All right, so are you...
I made it.
Can I ask where you are? Are you in some secret location?
No, I'm
you're
you
in
know,
Florida?
Yeah, and I'll be, you know... jetting in this afternoon. Mm-hmm. I'm spending my birthday. It's actually a special birthday, not because I'm 50, but I get to spend it with Dennis Prager and 700 or 800 of his friends from Illinois Right to Life tonight. I'm emceeing at their dinner.
Oh.
Yeah. So the great Dennis Prager will be in town.
Are tickets still
That's at
for
the
sale?
Carlisle in Lombard.
Oh.
I don't know.
Am I going tonight or am I parking cars?
I'm not selling tickets. I mean, if you want to make some extra cash.
Am I popping out of a cake?
Or
the roast is over.
I think Prager would like that.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, Dennis, nice to see you again. Yeah. Got a big birthday celebration. All right, 312-642-5600, wishing Dan a happy birthday all morning.
Well, I mean,
no, this
please.
Is a monumental
birthday. But that's just so, so obscene. You're... soliciting calls for to wish me a happy birthday.
You only turn 50 once. This is a big deal.
40 you only turn every year once.
Well, 50, you're half. Think about it. You are half a century old. Mm. Now you're on the slope down.
You know, I've been on the slope down for some time. Uh-huh. But I don't, you know, I mean, I know people say this, but maybe it's the Toby Keith thing. I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. And that's but I don't know. But I feel like I'm, you know, I can hang with kids in their, you know, late 40s.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, if you go out tonight, can you let me know where you're going? I could bring some of these gifts.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just walk around Chicago. I'm looking for Dan Prof. It's his 50th birthday.
I'll borrow one of those ankle bracelets from Tom Dart at the Cook County Sheriff's Office. See if they can track me. Rich, Indian Head Park, here in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, yes. Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Dan, I'd like to propose a toast to you this morning. Chin Don.
Toast.
Which means...
Chin Don. Yes. Thank you.
Which means, in Italian, means for 100 years. So I hope you live till you're 100. Have a great show and have a great birthday.
Thank you very much, Rich.
Somebody
sent
you
the toast.
I'm sorry, Amber Feldy, a Highlands single malt scotch whiskey.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, I was going to play it off that I gave you this.
Sure. All these gifts.
All these. Yeah, well, there's
right,
no names
from
on
Amy.
Them.
Yeah.
And they've been piling up at your mailbox, so I was going to say, right. Here, happy birthday, Dan.
Just throw the cards out and just a pile of gifts from Amy when I get there.
Uh-huh. Well, the cat bingo is from me, so, yeah.
Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hey, Dan, you're, you know, a few things. You're 49 in a day, so you're not really that, you're actually 50, but you know what I mean. And it is.
Yeah.
Honestly, this has been the best decade of my life so far, and I'm serious about that. You know, they, in Catholicism, you know, you reach the age of reason when you're 7, but I think you're going to you've reached the age of reason, hopefully, at 50. I'm kidding, but.
Yes,
thank you. Dan, you are one of the, you are, seriously, I've learned so much from you, and you, you know, I think my dad's birthday is today too, and so is Candace Owens. So two people who
and
I
so is so is know. So is Louis Aparicio, the White Sox.
I don't know who that is.
White Sox, for the White
Sox. The 1959 Go-Go Sox Hall of Famer, Louis Aparicio. Come on, Mary.
I don't know. I'm not a super Sox fan anymore, Cubs, but I all right. But they're a great team. And you know what, Dan? I think you have an eidetic memory, and my father had an eidetic memory. And you know, you just don't forget, and you everything you read, you can recall, and that's an amazing mind. It's a gift, and you know, you get to share it with everybody on the radio. And I'm telling you, it's Yeah, so thanks for all you do. I really appreciate it, and happy birthday. Have a great day. Are you playing golf today?
No, I got to travel. And I got to hang out with Prager. Well, I don't have to. I mean, I want to.
Tell
Dennis. It'll be fun. Yeah.
Tell Dennis I love him, too, and
he's
I'm at Prager U all the time. I love him.
Thanks
and we
the,
all love Dennis.
I know.
But we
thanks
don't
for
love
the
you.
Call, Rick. I hope my brain lasts as long as Dennis's, but I think I think I've only got a few years left.
So,
I do appreciate it.
Mike Scott, you're in the 50 club. Any advice for Dan?
58 is better than 50.
You're 58?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm telling you, 58 is better than 50.
Why?
Oh, because the difference between 48 to 50 and 50 to 58 is there's a maturity level that grows on you. Mm-hmm. You appreciate things a whole lot more at 58 than you do at 50. Maybe it's because you're approaching 60. But I got to tell you, if you think that Albert Feldy is staying in the studio, Dan, you are dead wrong.
Please,
my man.
Is this stuff expensive?
I re-gifted to the Scott family.
That's
it.
I gave him your burrito. That's enough.
That's a 12-year single malt. And,
I know.
And it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Please.
A minute. Here comes Justin. He's going to grab it.
I understand the need for self-medication in this profession, Mike. So please.
Especially over 50.
That's right.
It says it's from J.P. Babette, B-A-B-E-T-T-E. Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's from Amy Jacobson.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it used to be. Right.
I'm sorry. Give me a pen.
I thought that said J.B. Pritzker for a moment.
No. This is nice. Wow.
He is our governor.
He is.
Greg and Schomburg, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
To the people who can't see Dan on YouTube, Dan has a hat on with 70, and it has a line on the top of it. And everyone remembers from statistics that that means it's the median. So that means that Dan is actually actually a lot older.
That's very good, Greg. Very good. Thanks. But it's sub 70.
Oh,
you see what that indicates, which means I've got 20 years that I can continue wearing this hat. I'm sub 70.
On YouTube, people think you wear the hat to promote hair growth, by the way. The kiddies are saying about you behind your back.
Yeah, well, at this age, I probably need to. No, there's no minoxidil in my life yet, but I promote great golf courses or great golf companies like Sub 70. And I do it gratis just because I'm a giver to the game, Amy. That's my gift. On my, I do like the occasion of the birthday, though, to repeat or to replay one of my favorite bits from Greg Giraldo, who was one of my favorite stand-up comedians, dearly departed. This is about, you know, this celebrating your birthday when you're an adult, much less when you're an adult that reaches the upper reaches like I have.
And when did we become such a nation of such self-important, narcissistic douchebags that, you know, when it's your birthday now, you just think you can go to any restaurant and make the waiter sing happy birthday to you? When did that trend start? That's the most irritating. That used to be for children at Chuck E. Cheese. Now you can go to any restaurant. It's my birthday. Dance around or something. Give us a little song, would you? Give us a little song. Go get me a piece of cake. It's my birthday. You go to restaurants now, they got to break out in song every 5 minutes. I was in a restaurant the other day. The waiters had to go out four separate times to different tables and sing happy birthday. And holy the owner comes out, and even the dishwasher's out there saying, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. It's my birthday too, but no one's singing happy birthday to me because I'm in the back washing dishes for 50 cents an hour, but somehow I'm the bad guy for taking away American jobs.
Oh my
what
God.
F***ing job am I taking away? Who wants to wash a f***ing dish for 50 cents an hour? Okay, yes, arguably all of us coming over like this collectively lowers the labor rates in the country. We could debate it on those merits, but no, you're taking my job, you're taking my job, you're taking my job. What kind of f***ing ignorant bullshit is that? You have to ask yourself, are you willing to pay the increased cost of paying a prevailing wage for some f***ing slob to stand back there washing dishes? If it's such a f***ing problem, why don't you just penalize the employers who hire us? Oh, because that will be politically unpopular. How old are you now?
It's so good. Yeah, he was so good.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That's a good point Mike Scott made about birthdays at a certain age like mine, where you sort of have to indulge all the people around you as opposed to, you know, any desire to really have any celebration or festivities and so forth.
But you're doing tonight something that you love.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, it should be fun. Yeah.
Are the tickets still available, by the way? I got a bunch of text messages.
Illinois Right to Life. Go to their website. I'm not sure.
Right, you know, I'll find out.
I'm not in charge of
sales. I'll figure everybody's plans out for this evening.
Illinois Right to Life at the Carlisle in Lombard tonight. Dennis Prager is the keynote, and I'm emceeing, so it should be, and it's always a good event, so it should be fun.
Are you guys going to roast each other?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Maybe some friendly
banter.
Yeah, from friendly witticisms, but not the sort of mean-spirited attacks that you lodged against me.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. If you guys want to laugh, if you're staying at home tonight, you want to see really good comedy, because women are really funny.
Yes.
You should go to 560theanswer.com/roast and buy. It's $9.99, but it will be the best $9.99 you've ever spent in your life.
All right. Very good. All right.
Mike,
so,
did you want to say something?
No. It is a sellout for the Leaders for Life banquet with Dennis Prager and Dan Prager.
I figured it would.
Letting everybody know.
Well, you know, maybe there'll be scalpers.
Yeah, maybe your groupies will come and just wait for you to walk through the door. Are you going to go through the front door or the back door or the side door? People want to know, Dan. Your fans need to know.
I want to make a dramatic entrance, so I'll go right to the front
with
door.
With the cape? Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And the paparazzi and the whole, the whole thing, the whole show. Speaking of the show, that was fun yesterday. Jen Psaki.
Oh, you could do better on your birthday. Come on, Jen.
Sounds like the air's coming out of my Mylar balloon. not bad. She and the big guy, that's her boss, both trying to spin the GDP number yesterday that we discussed at the end of the show with our friend Jim Perry from Arbor Research. 1.4% contraction in the U.S. economy in quarter one of this year. And lo and behold, I don't know what people are worried about. It's actually nothing but good news we got to talk about here.
Sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. Psaki explains how that's, all for the good.
But what economists, many economists, Jason Furman has spoken to this and others, what they look at as measures of the strength of the economy and what they're monitoring closely from quarter to quarter as important indicators are consumer spending, business investment, residential investment. All of these increased at strong rates in the first quarter and as did the overall demand, and it are good signs for the strength of the economy.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing but good news here. Then she handed that little sheet of talking points over to the big guy so that he could rinse and repeat the good news about the economy contracting in quarter one.
Well, I'm not concerned about a recession. And I mean, you're always concerned about a recession. But the GDP, fell to 1.4%. But here's the deal. We also had last quarter consumer spending and business investment and residential investment increased at significant rates, both for leisure as well as hard products, number one. Number two, unemployment is the lowest rate since 1970. A record 4.5 million businesses were created last year. What you're seeing is enormous growth in the country that was affected by everything from COVID and the COVID blockages that we occurred along the way. Now, you always have to take a look, and no one is predicting a recession now. Some are predicting there may be a recession in 2023.
Mm-hmm. So he's not concerned, but he's concerned, but he's not concerned about a recession. Interesting. Wall Street Journal opining on this. The contraction caught nearly every Wall Street economist by surprise. The consensus was actually for growth of 1% or so. The decline also occurred despite historically easy monetary policy, as the Federal Reserve has only begun to tighten. Consumer spending on goods was flat, and the pace of gross private investment declined. And, of course, this GDP decline, this decline in our economic growth, and what's the axiom about economic growth? If you're not growing, you're dying. This coincides with, of course, inflation. The GDP price index, 8% annual rate on top of 7.1% in the previous quarter. So the combination of slow growth and rising prices is known as stagflation. And that's what we talked about
yesterday. Jim Perry.
And some of those listening may not be old enough to remember it or remember it well in terms of the experience, but many listening were. And we're old enough to remember it then and are old enough to remember it now. One quarter does not a recession make and does not stagflation make, but the trend is not encouraging. Also bad news is a year-long decline in real disposable income because wages are not keeping up with the pace of prices. So I just am fascinated to listen to this distillation from Biden and his mouthpiece about how, you're always concerned about these things, but they sort of give it the brush off. What was the Jen Psaki line about voting rights? Go have a margarita, go take a kickboxing class. Yeah. Don't worry about it. We got this. Uh-huh. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. The Journal Ed Board continued in response to those statements you heard from Biden, blaming the shrinking GDP on technical factors. The failure of this White House to adapt its domestic agenda to changing economic and political reality is a puzzle for the ages. And they call on Manchin and Sinema to shut down the whole Build Back Better effort that's still on life support, still being bandied about, shut that down altogether, because this, of course, is the response from these Bidenistas, these neo-Keynesians, is, well, what this needs is a little bit more government cash printed up and distributed. And what we're trying to say, I think what the Econ 101 lesson here is, you don't run an economy, or you don't have an economy. Run it implies that implies command control, which is the posture of the left. You don't have an economy predicated on printing more fiat currency and using the government to distribute it according to the political interests of who's ever in charge. That's not an economy. It's phony. And so if you don't have productive private sector enterprises, then you don't have an economy. And you don't continue to enjoy the standard of living that so many Americans have become accustomed to. And generations below Gen Xers in particular, but really even baby boomers, should start getting less accustomed to if this is going to be the policy choices we allow policymakers to make by the choices we make as to who those policymakers are. The tragedy of the Biden presidency, writes the Journal Ed Board, is it should be presiding over a long post-pandemic boom. Instead, it went for broke to transform the economy by creating a vast and permanently larger entitlement state, and politically broke it soon may be. Remember what the excited utterance we got from Socialist Spice Girl AOC's former chief of staff, right? The play here is to, that phrase, transform the economy. Remember what we heard from Gavin Newsom at the outset of the pandemic, this opportunity of government intervention and direction and shutdowns. At, you know, I mean, he would call it saving lives and public health. This pandemic provides an opportunity to transform the economy. Those were essentially his words as well. So they've been looking for, they meaning the big government left, sort of a redundant phrase. They've been looking for these opportunities for, you know, since the progressive movement of the early 1900s. They have had some major successes under FDR and LBJ and a few Republican presidents, too, including George W. Bush. And they haven't quite been able to execute the Cloward-Piven strategy as it was laid out by those academics 60 years ago. But what they're seeing now from the pandemic, during the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic, is the opportunity to, you know, get through the back door what they couldn't get through the front door, which is how we got the backdoor takeover of our health care. So if it can work for one-fifth of the economy, which is their thinking, Obamacare has worked for one-fifth of the economy, been successful in essentially bringing healthcare, the healthcare industry, under the control of the government, public-private partnership, then why not knock out the other four-fifths of the private economy as well? Well, what you're seeing right now and what so many people are feeling in terms of their purchasing power, in terms of their economic anxiety, the gathering storm, what you're seeing right now is why we shouldn't continue down this road to serfdom we've been on for the last 120 years. Tom in Oswego, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, happy birthday. I wish you many more.
Thank you.
My statement is, I don't know if people remember, but Barack Obama, before he was elected, while he was running, said he wanted to fundamentally transform America. And I remember watching that, and the people in the crowd were cheering. My jaw dropped and thought, they're cheering for something they don't know what hell he's talking about. I mean, or what he means. Well, this is what he means. And I think more people should read that book, 1984. I read it about 3 months ago, and I've been stunned ever since at how many of these things are actually coming true. And now, of course, the Ministry of Truth. That's what I'll call it. This disinformation governance board. it's really scary. People ought to hang on and buckle up because we're in for a wild ride. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Craig Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey, good morning, Dan and Amy, and thank you, Dan, for taking my call, and happy birthday to you. Listen, what my question is, where the heck are these fact checkers to look after these lying leftists and everything that were so critical of every little word that Trump would say and everything like that, and they let every single thing go by and everything, and especially when it comes to economy stuff and all this money and all this, how can they basically, where are they at? There isn't anybody that cares about, like, all these lies? What's going on?
Thanks for the call, Craig. It's just time to pay the price for not listening to advice and deciding in your youth on the policy of truth. Thank you, Depeche Mode. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and you know, it's a competitive marketplace right now because there's so much demand for homes, particularly in the Sunshine State.
Even here in Illinois, it's hard to get a home.
Yeah,
you have to have cash on hand. I don't know anybody. I have a neighbor who's been trying for 9 months now to purchase a home, and they get outbid every time, and they don't have cash because everyone takes the cash offer.
And the flip side is, right, you get into these bidding wars.
It's ridiculous.
But from the seller's perspective, you know there's going to be competition, so how do you bid up the house, right? How do you get, you know, your ask is whatever it is, but you want to bid up the house.
You put a plaque that says Pound Town in your bedroom.
That's one way to do it. Welcome to Pound Town. That's up in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
that's where Pound Town is located.
Forgot to take the sign down.
I know where Pound Town is.
Yeah.
But this also, here's an interesting way to do it, to sweeten the pot, to encourage. It's like at an auction. You know, you want to keep people bidding.
Right.
You got the nice home in Panama City, Florida, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, patio, pool, hot tub. And to keep the bidding going, Crystal Ball, her real name, 43, she added a Richard. To the deal.
Oh, wow.
She's going to throw in Richard.
Okay.
Richard is her 54-year-old ex-husband.
He stays with the house?
They recently got divorced, right. And she said the price tag could be reduced, actually, the other way, right?
Uh-huh.
If the Richard is allowed to stay. And there's pictures of him, like, leaning on a Barca lounger that's got a leopard print on it with a come-hither look and hiding behind a stuffed tiger.
Uh-huh.
Richard's an interesting guy. They say that the seller says that he will cook and clean and do other things. The dream man, this dream man will be your personal chef and server, cooking up perfect meals on a new stove with updated countertops you can make memories on.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. XL ears will pick up creaks and make sure WD-40 is applied to your new fixtures. Large Italian nose will sniff out any odors before you even think about taking the trash out your decorative front door. $700,000.
Is there a picture of this guy?
Yeah, that's in the New York Post.
Okay.
$700,000 is the asking price. But she's willing to reduce it for the person that'll let Richard stay. What do you think about that? Mm-hmm.
Okay, hold on.
Are you getting it?
I'm getting it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if I... I guess the question would be, how much are you willing to reduce it for us to keep Richard around?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to kick the tires on Richard, I think, a couple of times before you decide to have him as a throw in there to knock off a few grand off that listing price.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and as saying, all the Biden administration socialist stars were out in force yesterday. The big guy and his mouthpiece spinning the economic contraction in Q1. You had Mayor Pete talking to our friend Brett Baer about mask mandates. We'll get to that. You had Ali Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, before the House Judiciary Committee, talking about border security. Hoo boy, that was something.
Yeah.
The most entertaining exchange for my money was between Matt Gaetz and Mayorkas. And Gaetz brought up some very simple points. For example, there are 1.2 million people in this country illegally who've had their asylum cases adjudicated and have been issued a final deportation order, a final order of removal.
Okay.
So they have gotten their due process, and the decision was you need to return to your home country. What's the plan for those 1.2 million people, Mr. Secretary?
What is your plan to remove the 1.2 million?
Let me, if I may, as a,
do you have one?
As, yes, we do. If I may, Congressman, as a former prosecutor, let me ask you a question. If one has a finite amount of resources and one has a finite number of hours, and one has a choice of removing 20 shoplifters or three fugitive armed bank robbers, how would you spend your time?
I know how you've spent yours. I know how you've spent yours by decreasing by 48% the number of criminals you arrest, by deporting 63% fewer convicted criminals. You have the lowest deportation rate in the history of the department, right?
Your data that you cite is misleading.
No, it's your data. This is actually what your own agency is reporting. So do you think that it just might be the case that one reason that we will encounter the highest number of illegal immigrations in our nation's history this month and next month, because everybody knows that even if they come here, even if they go through the removal procedures, even if a judge issues a final order, you still think there might be more due process and you have no plan to remove them. And then when I ask you what the plan is, you say, oh, well, resources, I got to make finite decisions. I go back to my first question. How many ICE agents to remove the 1.2 million?
Congressman, I'd be pleased to provide you with a resourcing data subsequent to this hearing, if I may.
And I think it's telling that you, I think it's telling that you got plans for pronouns and you got plans for misinformation. But when it comes to the plan to remove the people that have had due process, you don't have one at all.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
So going after the shoplifters instead of going after the bank robbers?
Is well,
that plan? I mean,
no, what Mayorkas was trying to say is, of course, I'm focused the resources on removing people who are real threats to the public safety is essentially, I think, what the road he was going down. I have finite resources, so I'm prioritizing the bank robbers over the shoplifters.
Yeah, but the shoplifters can easily become bank robbers.
Well, regardless, the question that Gaetz asked, how many agents? This is like trying to get an answer from the Chicago Public Schools about how much money.
Right.
How much money will it take for you to actually teach a majority of children, even just a majority, much less all of them, a majority of children to read and do math at grade level? How much money?
Or the question, how many kids did you lose during the pandemic? Because they just won't answer that question either.
So you can never get an answer on resources because the answer is just more. It's more in perpetuity. And the other thing that Gaetz is getting to, as he walks Mayorkas down this road, is that this is not a lack of resources and it's not a lack of competence. The other number that Gaetz and Mayorkas batted around, 800,000. 1.2 million people who have had a final order of removal issued by a judge. They've gotten due process. They're, again, it has been adjudicated they shall return to their home country. 800,000. 800,000 is the number of people in the last fiscal year that Mayorkas and the DHS has released into this country who are here illegally. And so, Gates has a question for Mayorkas about those 800,000, and then a comment about Mayorkas and DHS that gets to the real point.
Will some of the 800,000 commit crimes, yes or no?
Undoubtedly.
Undoubtedly. And so the Americans who are the victims of the crimes for the people that you release in the country are collateral damage that you are willing to accept in order to have our border function as a turnstile. And you're willing to accept that collateral damage.
Congressman, I couldn't disagree with you more. Let me give you, if I can, some data that will actually...
Well, more than the data, how about this? Well, how did it feel to you when you went to the border and the Border Patrol agents turned their back on you?
One Border Patrol agent turned his back on me, and I addressed that as the leader of the Department of Homeland Security. So if I can return to data, because I want to make sure that you have accurate information.
Everyone knows that you have more people coming in than ever, and you're removing fewer people than ever, and it's because you have no plan and because it's on purpose. See, I don't buy the theory that you don't know how to do this. I think you're actually a highly competent dude. But the reality is your plan is to bring these people in and to send the message to the smugglers and the criminals that they will never have to leave. That's why your workforce turns their back on you. And you have tools that you could use to deport these people. You have facial recognition. You have flights going all over the country dropping people off. And I think we ought to use the best tools in the country to find these folks, round them up like they were at the Capitol on January 6th, and deport every last one of them. I yield back.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. The key charge there is that this is purposeful. And frankly, based on the quality of the answers, it's hard to reasonably conclude otherwise. 800,000 people are here illegally. Do you think any of them will commit crimes? Mayorkas says undoubtedly some will. And
yeah, well, then what are you doing about it?
Right. And so then why are they here? Why are they here, and why don't you know where they are? And how can you be advancing this policy of releasing people here who are not lawfully allowed to be here into the country, knowing what you just believing what you just said is true, that some of them will commit crimes? Undoubtedly some will. And how can you conclude anything other than what Gates said, which is that's acceptable collateral damage for you to advance the larger policy of de facto open borders? You can say you strongly disagree with it all you want, because it's an untenable position. It's an idiotic position. So you have to publicly disagree with it. You have to express moral indignation at even the allegation. But that's the policy. That's what you're saying the policy is. That's what you expect the results of the policy to be. Oh, but no, I don't want the negative consequences. I certainly don't appreciate the negative consequences. I don't support, or I don't want to tolerate the negative consequences that I know are coming from the policy that I'm implementing. That doesn't wash. So 1.2 million, 800,000. How about just 42? How about the number 42? Congressman Jim Jordan from Ohio wants to know where 42 specific people are. And here's what Mayorkas says.
Have any of the 42 illegal migrants on the terrorist watch list or no-fly list encountered on our southwest border been released to the United States?
Ranking Member Jordan, as I mentioned before, I will provide that data to you with respect to the disposition of each one. I do not know the answer to your question.
The Secretary of Homeland Security does not know the answer to the status of 42 individuals who came to our southern border illegally, are on the no-fly list and the terrorist watch list. You do not know if whether they have been released or not into the country. That's your testimony.
Ranking Member Jordan, as I've said before, I will provide you the data.
I yield back to the gentleman. That's amazing.
Mr. Secretary, this is outrageous.
42 people encountered on the southern border on the no-fly list, on the terrorist watch list, and he comes to a House committee hearing with that answer.
Maybe he didn't even know about those 42 people?
Maybe.
Or is he just playing dumb blonde right now?
Maybe he didn't know. If he didn't know, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe the answer is that some of them have been released into this country, and that's a problem, and he didn't want to admit to it. So he'll slow walk the paperwork over the course of the next how many ever months or years, as these bureaucracies are wont to do. Certainly he doesn't want to publicly disclose that in a congressional committee hearing. But how do you not know that's coming? How do you not know all these questions are coming? And the stammering bilge coming from Mayorkas' mouth in response to this? This is supposed to inspire confidence? I understand that he's in an impossible position, but, you know, so is the Biden administration on a range of other issues that they lie with great facility about. As you heard yesterday, the spinning of a economic contraction into good news by both the big guy and his mouthpiece. 42, 1.2, 800,000, no answers.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Jeff in Cal City.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and happy birthday to you, Dan. And I think it speaks well to your character that on your birthday you're going to be spending some time with the Right to Life organization. But as far as my my statement, I just wanted to say that, we talk about pendulum swinging back and forth, and I never see that with the conservatives. I think the Democrats are truly brilliant. They push for the most absurd, ridiculous, craziest policies, letting millions and millions and millions of immigrants flood across our border. And then when we fight back and we cut it in half, which is still more than ever before, we're okay with that. And I think it's ridiculous. The pendulum never truly swings back and forth. It only goes in one direction, back to the middle.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Thanks for the call, Jeff. I mean, I think that's the story of the growth of Leviathan over the last 100 years that we were talking about last hour in the context of these individuals in charge, these socialists and surrender Republicans that are both are proponents of big government to varying degrees. I mean, how do you run up $30 trillion in debt? And really probably another 100, 120 trillion in unfunded liabilities. It's like talking about Illinois. Right. I mean, how do you run up $313 billion in unfunded pension liabilities? How do you make Illinois, with all of its natural advantages, the worst governed state in the country? Well, you do it together. Both parties. I think that and you start from all the premises of the left. And when you get in charge, you just slow the pace of the move left. Or, you know, again, some of what Trump did, like some of what Reagan did, you actually move the pendulum on some issues back to the center right, but only temporarily and only on a relatively small range of issues. That's right. How do you get here over time? You start from the premises of the left that we're going to walk down the road to serfdom, and you say they want to sprint. We would like a leisurely gait. Chris in Barrington.
Good morning. Happy birthday.
Thank
Happy
you.
Happy Friday. But first of all, I don't, you know, we all shouldn't be surprised. This is what happens when you have an illegitimate president. You know, he ran on saying he was going to open the borders. They wanted to change America. And this is how they're doing it. They're trafficking in all these illegals, and we're not even going to be able to recognize this country anymore, you know. There's not going to be any more 4th of July parades, no more Memorial Day parades. There's so many people here with so many different values than what America was founded on. This is their plan all along. And they just put them up there and they lie right through their teeth and they got no problem with it. And until we do something about it, it's going to keep happening.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Yeah, I mean, the point of having a legal immigration system is to, number one, have a process that is fair to all, that is followed. Number two is to continue this experiment in self-governance called America. An important part of that, too, is assimilation, the melting pot. They don't want America as a melting pot. They want a balkanized America. The melting pot is a bad thing? Yeah, that's what they're saying. That's what the left is saying. The melting pot is a bad thing. They talk about these marginalized communities, and they stitch them all together to browbeat in pursuit of power. But it's what we talked about yesterday with David Mamet's comments on the Adam Carolla podcast. What does the left fear? Exclusion. What do they fear about from Musk at Twitter? Exclusion. What do? They exclude. And their inclusive language, their incessant talk about inclusivity is only related to people who think like them, whether they're from Hinsdale or Honduras. It doesn't matter. If you don't think like them, then you're excluded. If you think like them, then you're included because their power is derived from being part of the swarm. And that's what they're interested in, power over others. They cannot fly with their own wings, but they can swarm and attack as a group. That's what they do. And so to the point that Jeff was making, I mean, a million two who've had their cases adjudicated, and you have the Department of Homeland Security Secretary who can't tell you what the plan is to remove them from this country per the law. 800,000 people here illegally, and the Department of Homeland Security Secretary can't tell you what he's going to do about people who are in this country illegally, other than he knows they're going to commit crimes. 42 people who tried to enter through our southern border who are on the terrorist watch list and the no-fly list, and he doesn't know where they are, or he won't tell you.
Well, because he doesn't know where they are.
I don't know. We don't know that.
He didn't exude any confidence for a lot of us that watched that yesterday.
Maybe he does know where they are, and he knows they're on American soil.
Just being cagey.
The point is that those are the outrageous positions. That is insanity. But to Jeff from Cal City's, right. But if you call out those numbers and those individuals and the inanity of these policy choices, well, they just come back, well, you're a racist. you're afraid of the other. And then, or they don't address you at all. They just sort of power on past members of Congress, past the American people. They can only do so if they're in positions of authority. Bill in LaSalle County. Hey, Bill, LaSalle County.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. You know, part of the problem, I'm a direct-to-store delivery driver, salesperson, and I work in an urban area of the Chicagoland metro. I see every day where independent business owners are paying people cash under the table or bartering groceries or other. If the IRS used half of its amount of time that they go after conservatives and 501c3s to go after the independent business owners who are cheating the system, cheating the federal taxes, the state taxes, the Social Security and Medicare taxes, we'd be in a way better off position as a country.
Thanks for the call, Bill. One other exchange that's important from yesterday. We brought to you this story. Josh Hawley has raised the issue, Senator from Missouri. Others have as well. The notion that in addition to being indifferent to 800,000 people in this country illegally, some of whom you know are going to commit crimes, that was the Mayorkas position. In addition to being indifferent about the public safety of American citizens, the idea that resources dedicated to American veterans would be diverted from veterans to persons trying to enter this country illegally, beginning with healthcare resources.
People are just hearing about this, even though we talked about it, 2 weeks ago?
Ashley Hinson is a Republican congressperson from Iowa, and she put that to Mayorkas. Listen to his answer. It'll sound familiar. It's a non-answer.
We've heard that the administration is considering removing health care providers from the VA, for example, doctors and nurses whose taxpayer dollars and their intent is to help care for our veterans. So my question to you today is, yes or no answer, is the Department of Homeland Security planning to reallocate resources, doctors and nurses, from our VA system intended to care for our veterans to help care for illegal immigrants at our southern border?
Congresswoman, let me be clear, because an interagency effort is precisely what the challenge of migration requires, and it's not specific to 2022, nor 2021, nor 2020, or the years preceding.
Right, but I'm just asking you a yes or no question. Oh. Are you planning on taking resources away from our veterans to help deal with the surge at our southern border? That's a yes or no question.
Actually, Congresswoman, the resources that the medical personnel from the Veterans Administration would allocate to this effort is under the judgment of the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, who prioritizes the interests of veterans above all others. For very noble and correct reasons.
Do you know if you've, have you had any conversations about reallocating those resources?
I have not personally, but of course our teams, our personnel have, and I'd be very pleased to follow up with you.
Yeah. Our veterans need to know that the care that they've earned is going to be provided to them and not to those at our southern border.
That is
the other thing I'd like.
Does that inspire confidence, that answer? Oh, I haven't talked to the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, yeah, but my team is talking to them on this topic. One would have to conclude. What's the conversation? What else could it be with the Veterans Affairs director other than, hey, can we take some of your docs and nurses at the VAs and send them to the border?
Coming up,
unbelievable. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Good morning, Dan. Amy, this is the ghost of Jacob Snail. I wanted to call you. You remember me from the show Ozark. My nutty wife, Darlene, killed me for some reason. But
she wanted a younger man.
I guess so. She did. I heard she got what was coming to her, though, too. I haven't seen her in hell yet. But I do want to say that there was a lot more than just illegal migrants coming across the border. It's my business down, and the Ozarks attested to. We're putting some of that stuff coming from Mexico and other areas into our Bibles down in the south there. I've had to deal with the consequences of my sins. But I did want to come on this show and just talk about that a little bit, add to the conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Snell.
Frank in Arlington Heights. Jacob Snell from Ozark.
That's a good one.
That's a deep dig. He's really expanding his repertoire of impersonations.
But he nailed it.
Thanks for that, Frank. We appreciate it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, since we're celebrating birthdays today.
Yes, you're 50, by the way. And we're having a party. And you're not even here. And I tweeted out the celebration we're having without you. So,
well, maybe we can invite, or you can invite Steve from 88's mom, Alice, over. And she can celebrate with you. Because Mama Alice is turning 94 today, that is.
Wow.
Steve on 88, longtime texter, caller, Steve on 88. His mom Alice, Mama Alice on 88, as he calls her, 94th birthday today. So happy birthday, Mama Alice. All right. I feel like Willard Scott.
Smucker's Jam 100.
All right. We got some action at high schools around the Chicagoland area over the last 24 hours. We've got furries at Hinsdale Central. We got a fight at Lyons Township South, and we've got gunfire at a St. Rita baseball game.
Yeah, St. Rita was playing Merriman from Aurora. It was a freshman baseball team.
Marmion.
Yeah,
my nephew goes there.
Oh, he does. Was he a freshman baseball player? Because this is what happened at 5:26 p.m. during the game.
Yes.
Okay. 23 shots were ringing out. There's also a track meet going on nearby at the same time. And basically there was a shooting at the McDonald's, which was at 77th and Western, about a block away. And luckily no one was injured. But guess what, Dan? They kept going. It's like the movie. You know, Wayne's World. Car! Now it's gunshots.
Car!
Clear everything out. Car comes by.
Game on!
Game on!
And that's what they did. Luckily, again, nobody was hurt, but it's, I mean, I don't know if the Catholic Church, if Super just going to have to get more security for games, but that's...
Well, how do you have security for games that those shots were coming from blocks away? I mean, well, you know, how much? What's the security perimeter for a baseball game on the south side? I mean, that's the problem. I know this is going to be the summer of joy. How do I know that? Because Mayor Triple Threat said so. I'd be concerned on the south or west sides. I'd be concerned generally in the city of Chicago, but... My kids in open fields on the south or west sides of the city with the lawlessness that has been unleashed by this political class, I'd be concerned.
Daylight. I mean, it was still bright outside. If I was a parent, I'd be out of my mind. But again, the kids, they hit the ground. If you see the video, we tweeted it out. They hit the ground, some run, but then they get back in and start playing the game. And the track meet went on as well, too.
Speaking of violence... Another video that was making its way around before it was taken off of YouTube for violating YouTube's standards of service, terms of service. Yeah, right. This girl at Lyons Township South, Heaven Washington is her name. Mm-hmm. There's a video of her. Her friend is filming it. This is how the video was made and uploaded. Heaven Washington's friend was filming it. Encouraging her friend to beat up this girl that she was beating up, pulling by the hair, punching, kicking, had her on the ground, beat up that racist bitch, beat her ass ho. Those are the things that are being said on the video. This was allegedly because the classmate that Heaven Washington attacked was being racist. That's what Heaven is supposed to have said in defense. Whatever that girl did or didn't do, you don't get to beat on somebody in a school setting or any setting for that matter, like was displayed in that video, the way that Heaven Washington did. That's not a response to anything that was said, racist or not. But that's what happened. We don't have much in the way of comment from Lyons Township. Of course we don't. The principal there, a woman named Jen Tyrell, we are reaching out today to share we are aware of a social media post circulating that shows a student assaulting another student. Our team is currently working to investigate the situation, obtain additional information, support students have been impacted, whatever that means. Please know we are also collaborating with the Western Springs Police Department as they investigate this incident. Uh-huh. Yeah, it turns out that Heaven Washington is quite outspoken, as West Cook News reports, which I'll tweet out. She has gone after people on social media, since this is important to parents and schools. Be interesting if it's important in this case, because Heaven Washington is a black girl. She questioned her fellow student Leslie Mendoza's authenticity as a Latina after she disagreed with the student's leadership role on campus. She wrote, Heaven Washington did, of Leslie Mendoza, "You're a minority fighting against us. You're a hypocrite and overall just an awful person." She added another message about white people. "I seriously want to watch you all get COVID, LMFAO. Y'all most likely already do. White people are one of the nastiest kind, so y'all most likely already have it. Nasty asses." That's a quote. That's a post. She was also featured in the news in Chicagoland last year.
Oh, yeah.
After accusing another person of racism online, it triggered a rally at the school, an organized sit-in at the school. Police reporting, a February 14th report of the protest from
during
local
Black
police.
During Black History Month, yes.
Students organized in the library for a non-school sanctioned sit-in on the topic of racial equality. The sit-in was attended, partially moderated by school administration and staff. Short time after the sit-in concluded, a large number of students gathered and walked to the Performing Arts Center to continue voicing their opinions and concerns. Uh-huh. Yeah. She's also, I guess, been outspoken. She said, what are we doing to end racism? It's been going on since my great-grandfather went to LT. It sucks that we have to have a racist outbreak to actually speak upon the situation. Those are Heaven Washington's words.
And they also said they told Liz Nagy from Channel 7 both, you know, they intend to stay in school to continue speaking up when they encounter these kinds of confrontations.
Who intends to stay in school and speak up?
Washington.
Oh, she's speaking up? Well, she was speaking with her
fists.
Well,
this is a few, right, exactly. But I'm saying a few months ago when that story broke, she told, you know, I'm not, because the reporter asked her, well, is it so bad you want to change school? She's like, no, I'm staying here and fighting. Well, she really is staying there and fighting.
Yeah, she's also connected to a change.org petition to, quote, hold all racist students who have said racial slurs and who have hate-crimed, that's a verb now, other students who attend LTHS accountable for their actions. And, of course, Alliance Township High School has one of those really important $150,000 a year DIE directors.
Right, of course.
Jennifer Rowe is her name. And when she was hired, by having such a position, it demonstrates the community values equity and belonging and understands how it connects to academic success, social-emotional learning, blah, 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 all the performative and approved statements that you would hear from an Orwellian bureaucrat like every DIE director, every single
right.
one. But that's Lyons Township, and that's most high schools. And so
we'll continue to be relentless in our pursuit of creating an inclusive school culture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. St. Rita, safety at St. Rita, in and around St. Rita, God, maybe less scary. So what's going on inside the walls at St. Rita than at places like LT or Hinsdale, which we'll get to in a second. Jim in Western Springs, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Good to talk to you guys. I have six kids. The youngest daughter goes to Lyons Township North. So there's two schools.
Mm-hmm.
There's South and North, freshman, sophomore, where this incident happened, and the junior and seniors over on the North Campus. First of all, the girl, this not only is on film, our daughter brought it home yesterday. There's other technology snapshots of her and this guy or a girl, whatever he is. Indicating that, you know, we're going to get the white people. There's other things besides that video that are out there that my daughter showed me. The girl allegedly got the wrong girl. And I hope those parents of the girl that's coming out of gym class who got beat and the kid who filmed it are prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Now, I doubt that will happen because we're in Cook County here. But that was a racist attack by that girl on that white girl. My daughter yesterday dropped her water bottle, and a girl next to her, who was an African-American girl, called her a racist for no reason at all, and she just walked away from it. It's getting out of control. Started at Oak Park River Forest High School years ago.
Yeah.
You're getting it everywhere, and it's untolerable. I have a call into the school, you know, and this is what I'm surprised that girl that got beat and the kids that were around there aren't going to be going to Nazareth or any other school around here because it's just intolerable.
It's
disgusting.
Oh, sure it
it's
is.
Absolutely disgusting what's going on.
Does your daughter even want to go to school there anymore?
You know, she's a tough kid. She's on the North Campus, so she's, you know, an upperclassman, so she you know, she needs to finish school. And the timing is to move her to another school is not working right now.
Right. Yeah.
But this is not just – this is the race issue, which – is ridiculous, the narrative ridiculous. But this, you should see what they're teaching them in classes. I mean, a lot of parents have complained about certain things in English that happen, just like we've been talking about. And you try to be outspoken about it, and, you know, you're considered, you know, an alternative solution to it when there's no common sense. What happened, and when I saw that video last night when I go home from work, I felt so bad for all those kids around there, the girl that got beat. But the kid filming it should be prosecuted just as much as the girl that did that. And I pray for that girl that obviously got her hair pulled out for no reason. The girl's not a racist. There was no – what was the girl wearing? Was she wearing anything that said she was a racist?
No, she had like jeans and a red top on. I mean, there's nothing.
Right. She did nothing wrong, and it's unacceptable. And we've – you know, obviously this is Cook County. I used to live in DuPage County. But here – they just let it pass. It really, there should be a march at that school this morning. protesting that this kid and the kid that filmed it should be expelled from school for the rest of the year.
Oh, yeah.
End of story.
Thanks for the call, Jim. You. Appreciate it. I mean, if you've seen that video, if you haven't seen that video, I mean,
where can
it
I
is
see
a.
It? I want to see it, but it's going to enrage me though, and I don't. Want
it
to
is a beating.
Really?
It's a beating. I mean, frankly, at the end of the 40 seconds or so, the version of the video that I saw, I was surprised that the girl who was beat was able to get up and walk away. But I mean, it was a beating.
Did
being
she
cheered
beat
on by being cheered on by the girl filming it, as Jim from Western Springs was saying. And there's no defense to it, but that's the wonderful, inclusive environment that your dye groomers are creating at places like LT.
And the media is promoting this girl. I mean, again, she said a few months ago, "I'm gonna stay here and fight." Well, that empowered her, having all that media attention. Now she's beating up people just because they're white.
David Winnetka.
Yeah, good morning. So this happened to my friend's child. This is in Lake Forest, of every place. So this was last week in the lunchroom where this table of black students was kicking this girl's, her table of white students. They were kicking her chair, being loud, this and that. She turned around, asked them to be, if they could be quiet. They went absolutely nuts. They started calling her names. I got to dumb it down because we're on the air, but basically the one of them had violently said, "I hope you get raped in the butt by the entire football team," on and on. And then they took their school lunch, jumped up, and I can send you the clip. I've got this clip. I can send this to you guys. Jumped up and down on their school lunches. And you know who got suspended? The white kid. Unbelievable.
Please send us the clip. I'll put you on hold so you can send it to Quinn, our producer, will get you the information. Please send us that clip. I want to see it.
Yeah,
sure will.
Thanks for the call, David. The inclusivity. Are you enjoying basking in it at your kid's school? Your kid enjoying it? At Hinsdale Central.
Oh, boy.
Hinsdale Central has reportedly been allowing furries to wear animal costumes at the school, according to photos that were obtained by the DuPage Policy Journal. One photo posted on Facebook Wednesday shows a freshman student wearing what resembles a monster mask. Yeah. According to sources, the student believes she is not a human, but a cat. And she's not related to Amy Jacobson, shockingly. A fellow student who took the photo of the furry was given a detention, sources say. The school's principal of Hinsdale Central, William Walsh, by the way, his pronouns are he and him. You know how I know?
Because he said that.
Right.
Right.
We do not allow, this is great, I love this line. We do not allow students to wear masks that cover their faces at school. Oh, really?
Oh, you don't?
Since when?
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, the hypocrisy.
That's
deep.
Uh-huh.
That is great.
Yeah.
It's not part of the dress code. But before it was for 2 years.
Furries.
Yep, it's just weird because the person who took the picture of the furry got a detention.
Right.
Why? I mean,
well, I'll tell you what.
He's just recording he's recording history. We have a furry at our school, and they need a cat litter box. I'm surprised they didn't, supply that for the person or the furry.
I'm looking forward to the next fundraiser for Hinsdale Central, maybe like at Ruth Lake Country Club, where they're going to raise money for litter boxes and newspaper to put down for the furries at the school. Tony, Southside.
Forget the catnip.
Hey, now this is going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to address Amy. I'm going to say happy birthday, Dan.
Oh, thank
He's
you.
A little
50 years
lamb.
Old, man. Mm-hmm. How did you survive all those years in Chicago making it to the 50s beyond me?
I'm tough.
Anyway, yeah, I can imagine. My question to you, because you're a barrister, practicing maybe, I don't know. You say you are. Anyway, does the parents have any legal action against LTHS for not keeping a safe environment for that girl?
Sure they do.
And promoting this kind of situation that produces kind of violence, because it's ridiculous. I'll tell you right now, if that's my kid, oh, yeah, I'd be flying, man. I'd be burying bodies all over Cook County. So,
okay, yeah. Tony, thanks for the call. You got to pick your spots carefully in Cook County. But, we need more details on that fight. But that was a crime that was committed and caught on video. So very interested in what Western Springs police conclude and or do about this, since the school said the police are involved we'll let you know what the police do, if anything.
Her time in the sun may be over.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We'll see what the left's reaction to Governor Kemp's bill signing yesterday will be. I mean, Georgia is a favorite target of the left. They need to move heaven and earth to try and maintain Ralph Warnock in the United States Senate come the fall against Herschel Walker.
Yeah, I wonder if people are going to move there temporarily like they did during the special election. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah, Andrew Yang.
Yeah, Andrew Yang saying, I'm going to, you know, if you can work remotely, move to Georgia. Help us get the Democrats in.
So we'll see if Kemp gets the DeSantis treatment on this issue because he signed a series of bills related to K-12 education, including a bill known as the Parents' Bill of Rights that says, among other things, parents have a fundamental right to, quote, direct the upbringing and education of their minor children. What a revolutionary statement. Also indicates that important information about a child cannot be withheld from the parent, including information related to the child's education. Signed another bill which bans divisive concepts such as one race being inherently oppressed and another inherently being the oppressor from being inflicted in the classroom. That would be critical race theory. He also signed bills that ensure school board meetings are transparent, that ban obscene materials from school libraries, and allow retired teachers to return to the classroom full-time in high-need areas. Well, that's a smart, functional thing to do. It's nice that a governor's thinking about functional things with respect to K-12 education, considering how poorly it's performed, particularly when kids were locked out of schools. And also gives the Georgia High School Association the authority to decide whether children born boys but who identify as girls can participate in girls' sports. Uh-huh. Well, why would a Governor Kemp need to do this any more than a Governor DeSantis and Florida Republicans need to do what they did? Well, I'll give you an example of why. Here's a training session from the U.S. Department of Education. It's three educators on a Zoom call talking about cleaning up the language in the classroom. Let's get it right, people. Take a listen.
Put together a language guide. Our site is called genderinclusivebiology.com. And some things that we come up on a lot are for teaching about cell division or reproduction. A lot of textbooks, a lot of existing teaching will say, well, women produce eggs. Males are more likely to be colorblind. The mother carries the fetus for this many months. And some ways that we can show our support for trans and non-binary students are just to clean up that language, be more precise. We can be more accurate and be more inclusive. So I would say, no, it's not women that produce eggs. It's ovaries that produce eggs.
Oh, come on.
That's accurate. That's precise. We're acknowledging that not all women produce eggs and also not all egg producers are women, for example. And we're teaching students that language matters. We're not just talking about imaginary people and living things, that our language impinges on the people in our classroom and in our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe as a educational tool, they can... teachers can play that he's expecting Netflix series in the classroom, too.
I tried to watch it. I just couldn't. I couldn't. And by the way, men don't have ovaries. They never will.
Ovaries produce eggs.
Right. Ovaries. Right.
Yeah. Are ovaries attached to anything? Or
yes,
they
would be in the uterus.
They just produce
next to
eggs.
A fallopian tube.
Yeah, boy.
I got that body part wrong, but you know what I'm saying.
I mean, look, like Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, I'm not a biologist, so it's impossible for me to comment on this. Maybe Quinn Hillier can help us. Quinn Hillier, senior commentary writer, editor for the Washington Examiner. Quinn, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
So the performance on things like reading and math, even for the high-performing students. Actually, we mentioned this yesterday, Jason Riley's piece in the Wall Street Journal. U.S. Department of Education study finding that 2019 high school grads, as compared to their counterparts from a decade earlier, perform worse in math and science despite higher grade point averages and the perception they're taking more rigorous math and science courses. So we know that. We know what the performance on reading and math is in terms of percentage of students at grade level in places like Chicago, New York, and just about every urban center. And the key here is to make sure that kids know that ovaries produce eggs, not women with ovaries.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, get with the program, people.
I'm trying.
Yeah. This is Orwellian. This the only thing that was true that that Department of Education person said was that language matters. Language does matter, and that's why language should not be changed to something that's false. Language should represent what is real, and it is not real to say that that you can be a man and have ovaries. It is not real to say that men can have babies and right on down the line. That when you are changing the very nature of what words mean by government dictate, you are in Orwellian territory where you know, black is white and up is down and you're into doublespeak and you're on the path to totalitarianism.
And also marijuana is cannabis. The Washington state, the legislature there, and their enlightened Governor Jay Inslee bans the word now marijuana from official state law and documents because using the term marijuana is racist. How do I know this? Because the state representative Melanie Morgan from Washington State told me so. The term marijuana itself is pejorative and racist. As recreational marijuana use became more popular, it was negatively associated with Mexican immigrants. It was. Even though it seems simple because it's just one word, the reality is we're healing the wrongs that were committed against black and brown people around cannabis. So I just wanted to make sure you're updated on that.
Yeah, this is lunacy. I think he's been smoking too much of that stuff.
Cannabis, you mean?
Yeah, weed, pot, marijuana. You know, there are a lot of good words for it, but none of them have anything to do with race.
Well, the good news, as you write about, is that if there's not a lot of good news coming out of the pandemic, but this is perhaps the most important bright spot, is the rethinking of K through 12 education by so many families around the country and the renewed vigor where it was needed for competition at the K through 12 level through charter schools and school choice programs.
Well, yes. I mean, school choice programs are growing by leaps and bounds. And of course, that means that the Biden administration wants to quell or quash it. You have something good going, and the left and the bureaucracy says, we can't have that. That takes away our control. So the Biden administration has looked at these tens of thousands of new families choosing charter schools, and they are proposing a new rule that will seriously hamper the initial federal seed funding or keep, you know, federal money flows through the states that then flows to the local school districts, and they are restricting how that money can be used to make it much harder to have charter schools, especially, get this, in the inner city neighborhoods where the education performance in general is the most poor, where the schools are the worst, and therefore where alternatives are most needed.
And that's where most of the teachers' unions are located.
Exactly.
Because that's their biggest fear is charter schools.
Exactly, because that means they lose their monopoly and they actually have to go back to work and have to do work that means something and that that is judgeable and has to compete in a marketplace. Now, again, you've got the good news that parents are choosing charters. You got the bad news that Biden administration is proposing to make them much harder. But the good news is it's not just conservatives that are pushing back. It is the center-left Democrats, people like Mike Bloomberg, no conservative, former mayor of New York, has $70 billion. He is writing saying that the Biden rule, proposed rule, is terrible because charter schools are good and you should not hinder them. So is Mary Landrieu, former Democratic senator of Louisiana, where I'm originally from. I watched Mary's whole career from 1979 on. She's no conservative, but she's old school liberal and cares about people and actually cares about data that shows that charter schools work. So she's fighting back. So you got the parents against the Biden administration. You've got the sort of old style honest liberals against the Biden administration. So maybe we can stop the Biden administration from this terrible rule that will make it much harder to start charter schools.
He is Quinn Hillier, senior commentary writer and editor for Washington Examiner, WashingtonExaminer.com. Quinn, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan and Amy. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. You too, and have a great weekend. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the big guy and his mouthpiece came out yesterday swinging with their spin on the Q1 economic contraction, negative 1.4% GDP ungrowth. But I'll tell you, after listening to Jen Psaki, I'm not only excited about this economic contraction, I'm looking forward to a recession. Take a listen.
So GDP, which is what that's a measure of, measures a couple of different components of economic data: consumption, investment, inventory, and exports. On a number of these data components, we had very positive signs in this same set of data, including consumption. Consumer spending was up by about 2.5%. On investment, business investment, residential investment, both up as well. And on exports, the number was down, but that is largely because our economy is doing better than many economies around the world. So while we were purchasing a lot of goods from other countries, there wasn't the same capacity to purchase our goods. That is why that number was lower. And then on inventory, which is another piece of data that is measured, quarter four of last year had the largest inventory number of any quarter in history, in large part because as the supply chain problems were being fixed, thanks in large part to the president's efforts, businesses were able to get goods, and they made enormous purchases, largest numbers to stock their inventory of any quarter in history. And this, what this data is measuring is changes in growth from quarter to quarter. So because of that, even though this was the fifth largest inventory quarter in history, in comparison with the fourth quarter of last year, it showed a decrease, which led to the number.
Of course.
Wow.
Up is down, freedom is slavery, and contraction is expansion. For more on this, pleased to be joined by Carol Roth, former investment banker, entrepreneur, author of The War on Small Business, How the Government Used the Pandemic to Crush the Backbone of America. Carol, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys, great to be with you. And Dan, happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you to you, but that wouldn't be fun for anybody.
Yeah, we're having a party for him, Carol, here in the studio. And guess what? He didn't show up to his own party.
Yeah.
I brought him food.
What could be a better present than that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that was my present to them.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, the good news yesterday, Carol, the economy contracted 1.4% in the first quarter. Things are going well.
Yeah, I mean, this is a heck of a Biden boom. I keep hearing that this is the best economy of all time. and we have negative GDP, and we have record inflation, and we have not enough people in the workforce to fill the jobs. That's quite a boom, don't you guys think?
Yeah, well, how long can he keep blaming Putin's, you know, this is Putin's problem and Putin's price hike and COVID before the American people catch on?
Well, they caught on.
It's funny. It's sort of, Dan alluded to it with the, recessions are good for you. And, it would be funny if it weren't sort of the trajectory that we're on. We saw it with inflation, where it was not going to happen, then it was going to run a little bit hot, then it was transitory, then it was consumers' fault, then it was corporations' fault. Now we're at the it's Putin's fault. The same thing with the economy contracting. This is some of what Jen Psaki was saying in terms of the components does ring a little bit true, but the fact that we didn't have just kind of, a squeaker of growth, 1% or, a little bit like that, and we were actually negative, really says to me that we're in this really bad economic place called stagflation, where the economy is stagnating, but at the same time, we're not having inflation come down. And I think that, it's in some ways the worst of all worlds for consumers and for the value of the dollar. And while I expect that we'll probably see GDP growth maybe eke a little bit better of a number for the next quarter, I think that's going to be a head fake. And by the end of the year, we're really, especially with what the Federal Reserve is doing, with their insane monetary policy, this really could portend late this year or early next year, even a possible recession.
Yeah, and the prospects for prolonged stagflation is really the question. Is this, as you said, some of the underlying things she's saying in terms of the component parts of GDP, they could go a couple different ways. But whether or not we have two consecutive quarters of negative growth, and that's the definition, working definition of recession, or it's just extended anemic growth, the results are fairly similar for most middle-income Americans. It's going to be a slog for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, especially since we're probably still not going to see wage growth keep up with the pace of inflation. And, that means that your dollar is buying fewer goods and services. What is really scary is, like you said, that this is going to really fall on the average Americans and, the small businesses, the folks who really are in the worst or the most vulnerable financial positions, and the people who are the elite, although they'll take a little bit of pain. We've seen it in the stock market temporarily, not as much in the housing market. That will end up bouncing back, but these price hikes and this difficult time is something that's going to stay with people long term, especially on the inflation front. That's until we have deflation. Even if we get a slowing of inflationary growth, that's still building on these already high numbers. And that's a permanent tax for lower and middle class Americans.
What about something else that is being kicked around again? And was commented on both yesterday by Biden, earlier in the week by his mouthpiece, and that's the cancellation of up to $1 trillion of outstanding student loan debt. And it was interesting, Phil Wegman over at Real Clear Politics asked Jen about that, if she had any plans, if the Biden administration had any plans to provide any sort of relief for the individuals, for Americans who took out student loan debt and repaid the entire debt. And she said, well, no, we don't have any plans for that. And, of course, it was the question that understates the larger point. Some people play by the rules and abide their responsibilities and have to, and other people don't. And, if they go down this road, it'll be very interesting to see how those middle-income Americans we were just speaking about react.
Oh, this is so frustrating on so many levels. I definitely have some sympathy. But bottom line, as you were saying, this is getting people who made the decision not to go to college or decided to go to a cheaper college, or who paid back the loans to now take on the obligations of the people who did not. It is, the working class now having to pay for the laptop class, the pajama class, and the inability or the lack of desire to put their own obligations. But it is nuanced. The fact that the federal government got in the way, took over the majority of student lending, and has become truly a predatory lender. I mean, a lot of these multiple five-figure loans they're giving to 17-year-olds who don't really have the wherewithal to make the decision, and their involvement has allowed the cost of college to skyrocket, putting a lot of dollar demand into a relatively fixed supply of education with absolutely no skin in the game. They've taken away underwriting and any ability to discharge this in bankruptcy court. And, from an interest standpoint, they're counting on making money off of these loans when basically, everybody else, big corporations, the government has gotten free money via Fed policy. So there are a lot of really bad things here. I mean, I think they could do something with perhaps discharging some of the interest and letting some of the egregious interest go towards principal and some relief. I think that potentially could be a helpful solution. But nothing is going to change by cancellation. This isn't going to change the fact that the next group of people are going to be in the exact same situation because they're fixing the symptom, not the problem. And, basically at the end of the day, they're just buying votes.
But eventually, won't that increase tuition? Because nothing's for free.
It does. And we've seen the fact again. And in any sort of free program or low-cost program that is put in by the government, just kind of like the government making more dollars available to people no matter what, regardless of underwriting status. There's no, if you're going to be an engineer and you're an A student, you get more. And if you're a C student, studying underwater basket weaving, you're getting less. The same thing here. If we go down the free road, we all know there is no free lunch, and that becomes very expensive. And, the people in the government aren't the ones paying for it. You and I are the ones paying for it. And, that is the challenge. And it's just very emblematic of continuing to not address the structural problems. I do wonder, though, kind of like with bankruptcy, if they discharge it, do you have to give up your accreditation? Do you have to give back your degree? Can you still trade on that, or is it just a present?
Oh, I think their idea is just a present, and they also have a legal challenge, too. I know great legal mind AOC thinks that this can be done by executive order, the wisp of a pen, but it can't. So that will be litigated, too, if that's the way they try it. But you're right. I mean, the key takeaway is that somebody's student debt becomes everybody's debt. And, that's the socialization of everything, which is, I guess, what you expect from socialists.
I'm gonna start lobbying. I think they should pay off my Nordstrom card, and I'll just go load up. Amy and I, we're gonna go. We're gonna get some fabulous shoes, and then we can have a shoe crisis, and they could just pay that off. That sounds great.
Or we could start a GoFundMe my feet campaign.
Well, if we do that, Amy, that may turn into something else. So we have to be careful about that one.
Carol Roth, former investment banker, entrepreneur, author of The War on Small Business, How the Government Used the Pandemic to Crush the Backbone of America. Carol, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Have a great weekend and happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah,
thanks. And he joined us, or she joined us, excuse me. It's his birthday, and she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We've hit on some of the leading lights of the Biden administration, this morning, the big guy himself, his mouthpiece, his Secretary of Homeland Security. We may have more to say about him and what he testified to before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday, before the hour is up. But there are a couple of others I want to get to. Make sure we profile all of the talent that has been assembled by the big guy. For example, these are below-the-fold appointments, but they matter. Federal judicial appointments? Of course they matter. The Biden administration wants to make history, because it always works. Right? Make history. We just got done with that with Ketanji Brown Jackson. The identitarian characteristic is what matters for a judge, not their jurisprudence, their intellect, their record. Well, the Biden administration is trying to make history with the first Muslim woman nominated to serve as a federal judge. It doesn't matter to me. It matters to them. And that's what, of course, we need to understand about the identitarian left and also point out. The fact she's Muslim doesn't matter to me. Doesn't matter to conservatives. It does matter. It's the only thing that matters to the left. Is that the kind of society you want to live in? Is that who you want on the bench and the basis on which they're elevated to the federal bench or higher? John Kennedy asking Nusrat Jahan Chaudhry about her views on police. Take a listen. Senator Kennedy from Louisiana. It's a nice exchange.
This is a really simple question, Counselor. Do you believe that cops kill unarmed black men in America every single day? You said it at Princeton.
Senator, I said it in my role as an advocate.
Oh, okay. You didn't mean it.
Senator, I said it in my role as an advocate to make a rhetorical point.
So when you say something that's incorrect, it's okay to excuse it by saying, oh, I was being an advocate? What do you believe? Do you personally believe that cops kill unarmed black men every single day in America?
Senator, I believe law enforcement have an important and challenging job in this country.
That's not what you said, though, Counselor.
Senator, I say before you here today that I do believe law enforcement have a difficult and challenging job, and I also understand the difference
I just
between...
think that's an extraordinary statement to make with no data to back up. No, none whatsoever. There's no basis for you saying that. And you knew it then, and you know it now. How can one possibly believe that you're going to be unbiased on the federal bench?
Senator, I believe my record shows that I have worked collaboratively with law enforcement in Boston, Chicago, Mississippi, and Milwaukee to solve complex problems to promote constitutional, effective, and
safe
policing.
Your record shows that you believe cops are guilty until proven innocent. Your record shows that if a cop... If a cop shoots a criminal, it's the cop's fault. And if a criminal shoots a cop, it's the gun's fault. I've read your record, Ms. Murrell, and I don't appreciate you not answering the question straight up. I would respect you a lot more if you'd just tell us what you believe and not try to hide it.
Love the exchange. It's about time that more conservatives were on offense against this offensive identitarianism of the left.
But she Greg, said it, and she's not, like, I mean, she said it.
No, right.
What, during her
right.
time at Princeton, cops I mean, kill unarmed black men in America every single day.
This is why I love that he didn't let her get away. Well, I was saying that as an advocate. What does that mean? That you didn't mean it or you did mean it? If you get to say whatever you want, the veracity of it doesn't matter as long as you couch it as I was saying that as an advocate. You're a nominee for a federal judicial appointment, for goodness sake. That's somebody that should not be confirmed, and we'll watch to see if you can peel off a mansion or maybe some other Democrat that has a little bit of self-respect and won't allow that exchange between her and Senator Kennedy to go unadjusted, to go without sort of the proper vote. There's another exchange like this, too, yesterday with DHS Secretary Mayorkas. This one, we played some earlier, just some incredible statements by Mayorkas, this guy, former federal prosecutor, too, tells you something about the quality of federal prosecutors, at least when they're nominated by the left. But, I mean, again, the federal prosecutors are there from their perspective to not enforce the law. So Mayorkas is doing a wonderful job as DHS secretary of not enforcing the law, too. But they have their boogeymen. And Florida Congressman Greg Stube called him out on those boogeymen.
That we just flushed out here. How many cases involving white supremacists and domestic terrorists have you referred to DOJ for prosecution?
Congressman, let me...
Do you not have the number? It's a simple number.
You've made some profoundly inaccurate statements.
No.
That I would like the opportunity to correct.
I'm specifically asking you a question. You just clarified. Domestic terrorism is a threat to the homeland, number one threat. And I'm asking you, how many referrals from Homeland Security have you made to DOJ for white supremacy or domestic terrorism?
Congressman, I will provide you with that information.
So you don't know.
Subsequent to this hearing, I do not have.
Can you name one case?
That statistic.
Can you name one case of a referral from DHS to DOJ for domestic terrorism?
Congressman, I will provide the data to you.
I'm asking you, you can't name one case.
And let me just say.
Okay, so you can't name one case yet. According to a new report from the U.S. Department of Justice, almost half of all the criminals prosecuted in federal courts in 2018 were aliens, charged with crimes ranging from drug trafficking to murder and to kidnapping. And the vast majority, 38,000, were illegal immigrants, illegal aliens. But it's still domestic terrorism is the number one cause of your concerns. Texas.
Yeah. It's just so great. I mean, it's just so on point. And of course, Mayorkas doesn't have the information on his own conduct. He doesn't have the information on 42 individuals that are on the no-fly list, that are on the terrorist watch list, who tried to enter the southern border. He doesn't know where they are. He doesn't have a plan for the 800,000 people that were released into this country who are here illegally. He doesn't have a plan for the 1.2 million people who have had their asylum cases adjudicated and have a final order for their removal to send them back to their home country. Doesn't have plan. Doesn't know anything about anything. Doesn't have a plan for anything. He's just there to recite the boogeyman talking points, like Merrick Garland. It's school board. It's parents at school board meetings. They're the real threat to democracy. It's white supremacists. They're the preeminent threat to our democracy. It's cops, according to the nominee for the federal bench. They're a threat to our democracy because they're running around shooting unarmed black men. Well, it was just a wonderful day yesterday of exposing the left with the help of the left for who they are and have always been. And, of course, one of the other things that is a threat to our democracy, free and fair elections.
Yeah. And also, Biden's new disinformation czar. Have you seen this? Her name is Nina Jankowski. She was named the lead, you know, the Department of Homeland Security's new disinformation governance board member.
Are you ready? Executive director.
Executive director. Yeah. Well, she has a little song that she released on TikTok. And this is not a joke. I thought it was a joke at first. It's not.
Information laundering is really quite ferocious. It's when a huckster takes some lies and makes them sound precocious by saying them in Congress or a mainstream outlet. So disinformation's origins are slightly less atrocious. It's how you hide a little idle lie. It's how you hide a little idle lie. It's how you hide a little idle lie. When Rudy Giuliani shared bad intel from Ukraine, or when TikTok influencers say COVID can cause pain, they're laundering disinfo when we really should take note and not support their lies with our wallet, voice, or vote. Oh!
Wow. This is somebody who...
These are adults.
Of course she's a... We talked about it yesterday. Of course she's a purveyor of disinformation, Nina Jankowski. Of course she is. She tweeted out that the Hunter Biden laptop story was a Russian disinformation campaign. She knows disinformation when she sees it because she's a purveyor of it. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Catherine Engelbrecht from True the Vote. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, we are now pleased to be joined by Catherine Engelbrecht from True the Vote. Catherine, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
So we talked earlier in the week to your friend and collaborator Dinesh D'Souza about the film 2000 Mules, and he explain to us the important role that True the Vote did with the data collection and synthesizing of data that was so necessary to lay out the case that is laid out in that movie. Tell us a little bit about what True the Vote did and why you did it.
Sure. Well, True the Vote started in 2010, and we, for over a decade, have watched the erosion of our election process, and it was, you know, in overdrive in 2020. And so as the months ticked away and things got, you know, curiouser and curiouser relative to the changes of process, we began to develop a strategy for trying to measure whether or not some of these process changes, in fact, would lead to abuse. And so we centered our efforts around the privately funded by Mark Zuckerberg drop boxes and developed a plan to monitor how many times cell phone devices went to drop boxes and then track that all the way back to intersection with nonprofits and then did a very deep dive into what those patterns of life look like. And we did this in 5 states and 5 jurisdictions. We worked on this project for about 13 months and tried diligently to move the various jurisdictions forward with election administration officials and with law enforcement. For a variety of reasons, everything was so hyper-political that, and we'd just come through such a long season of disinformation that it was difficult. So in the summer of 2021, I called Debbie and Dinesh and said, we have what we believe would be a great movie. And it's an opportunity to tell the story in long form. And we put it all together, pitched it, and very pleased that Dinesh took the project and put it on film for us. But it's the culmination of really, in many ways, the last 12 years of the existence of True the Vote, knowing where to look and how to unearth what we now see, on the big screen, which is a breathtaking subversion of our election.
And who are these 2,000 mules? And I think Dinesh told us that there was one that you were able to speak to.
Yes, well, we've actually spoken with several people that were involved directly or tangentially in various jurisdictions. We every cycle run an election integrity hotline, and that has always served to develop good intelligence to us about what's happening on the ground. And so that was really for 2020. That was really the start of it. The way that geospatial data works, and that's the data that we use, the cell phone device data, is used routinely in law enforcement, but it's a very exacting type of data that gives you an awful lot of information about the device owner. And so that is one of the elements of what we're able to provide to law enforcement to show the full complement of what this device's pattern of life looks like. I think for the purposes of the movie, what is most interesting, maybe, or one of the most interesting elements, is that was also select areas there were cameras, video surveillance on drop boxes, and so we were able to use the geospatial data that included, among other things, timestamps. We were able to use those timestamps to then anchor off of to try to identify and isolate the same timestamps in the video surveillance. And what you see in the movie is the matchup of the geospatial data to the available video. And when you see what's in the video, it all becomes very, very clear. People that are wearing gloves, depositing multiple ballots, doing this repeatedly, taking pictures of themselves or taking pictures of the process of them dropping ballots, which we had been told by informants is how one of the ways that they get paid. And all of it comes together, through this video. But it points to a much broader problem. It points to a level of organization of these insurgencies that I don't think has really been given its necessary investigation to this point. I mean, we've been under this illusion that mainstream corporate media wants us to believe that it was all a big lie, nothing to see here, just keep moving. And it's simply not the case. Our process is being corrupted. The fraud has been institutionalized. And hopefully this movie is going to help move the needle in waking people up and seeing some action come as a result.
Your story about becoming a grassroots activist is really interesting. And for people that may not be familiar, I think it's worth sharing. You were a business person, and you, if I'm recalling correctly, you were beset, was it a manufacturing company, and you were beset by mm-hmm. the alphabet soup of regulatory agencies. So you found True the Vote in 2010, as you were describing. Then you're one of the groups that was targeted by the Lois Lerner team at IRS for denial of 501c3 because, you know, the IRS didn't like your politics and the Obama, the first two terms of Joe Obama. And you know, fast forward now more than a decade, and this True the Vote and the election integrity issue that, as you say, you have built up into the work product that's in this film, 2000 Mules, over a decade. I just it's interesting because it's not something, you weren't a politician, you weren't an activist, you were a business owner, and then this journey over the last decade plus to where you are today.
Yeah, although I would say to make one slight comment about that timeline is that prior to starting True the Vote, I had never been involved in any way with any government agency other than filing taxes. Never been audited. Never seen the inside of a courtroom. Never, none of these things had ever occurred. Starting in 2010 when I started True the Vote, that changed within a period of months.
That was the event, the triggering event, as it were. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
Right. So over the next 23 months, next 18 months, I went through 23 audits or investigations for five different government agencies, including the IRS. Yes, we were at the eye of the storm on the IRS targeting. We sued the IRS in 2013, finally beat the IRS in 2019. And I'll have to tell you, at that point, because, you know, our story just sort of bifurcated. People knew us almost as well for the IRS fight as they did for our work in election integrity. Mm-hmm. And it went on for years. But it was, you know, after we finally had the ruling in court that, in fact, our constitutional rights had been abridged by the IRS and they had obstructed justice, I thought, well, maybe that's what True the Vote was about. Maybe True the Vote was all about getting this good case law and fighting this fight against the IRS and demonstrating that, you know, if you stand up against the system, you can win. And then 2020 began to percolate. And now I look back and see that what I went through with the IRS and all that's happened before was to toughen us up for what's coming next.
Providential. The movie 2000 Mules, she is Catherine Engelbrecht, True the Vote, as you've heard from her and you heard earlier in the week on the show from Dinesh D'Souza, True the Vote, instrumental in the production of this film. Pre-order now available May 7th, 2000 Mules at Salem Now. Go to salemnow.com and order 2000 Mules. Catherine Engelbrecht, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the film.
Thanks so much.
And if you want to order your tickets today to see this movie, 2000 Mules. They're selling out quickly. There's only 7 theaters in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area, showing this film for 2 nights only, and you can only purchase tickets in advance. It's going to be on May 2nd and May 4th. The place to go to buy your tickets is 2000mules.com. Again, that's 2000mules.com. And Catherine joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Dan and Amy, it is that time of the week, Open Mic Friday, taking your calls with comments, criticisms, general concerns, miscellaneous crack pottery. We'll take it all. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-360-A, turnkey.pro text line.
Yeah, we had a birthday party for you that you didn't show up for. And I bought you a $12 burrito, the California burrito from the diner. I mean, I dug deep into my pockets.
Well,
for you, Tootsie, and now
can,
I get
you
it.
You can put it in the kitchenette and let the raccoons attack, because somebody will take care of that for sure.
But we had a lot of birthday wishes. Two things that I just wanted to say real quick. Quotes of the week. Can Elon Musk please buy Illinois next? Good one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody texted in because we were talking about that furry student who goes to Hinsdale Central High School.
Yeah.
They texted in on our text line. Those furries are getting really popular. Just last week, I saw one directing President Biden when he went off topic.
Probably a Hinsdale Central grad.
Could be. I mean, it could be a major, but that came from the Amish texter, of course.
All right, let's get to the lines. Dave in Ravenswood.
Hey, well, first of all, happy birthday, Dan.
Thank you.
And secondly, I really enjoyed the piece you did where it was shining a light on like a federal appointee having their past activist comments come back to haunt them. It really, the more I reflect on the left, I think of the Jussie Smollett situation, you know, where he staged himself as the star of a liberal fantasy of being a victim. And everyone knew the moment it happened, it wasn't real. So there's all these narratives on the left that are manufactured, but the moment someone tries to actually make it real, everyone knows it's not true. It's crazy how on the left we have to manufacture these fake things to enrage our base, but on the right we just have to report what's actually going on to enrage the base. It's a bizarre dynamic.
Indeed.
Yeah, yeah, and the left, well, the Smollett case, I mean, Biden tweeted out about that, supporting him, so did Kamala Harris, they all did.
Yeah, and that clip we played was the exchange between Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana and a federal district court nominee leveled up by the Biden administration, who had previously said, and Senator Kennedy called her out on it, previously said that cops kill unarmed black men every day in this country. And he challenged her. And then she did the, you know, I was saying that as an activist, or saying that as an advocate response. And he's, what does that mean? Do you believe it or not? If you say something as an advocate, it doesn't have to be true.
I mean, just
you don't have
it.
To. You don't have to provide evidentiary support.
I mean, how do you talk your way out of that one, though?
She didn't do a very good job. Mm-hmm. Jennifer and Lena.
Oh, I love
you. Hi there. Happy birthday.
Oh,
long time listener. I know I keep talking about Richard Irvin because no, it's not what you think. No one with a brain would work, would support Irvin or Sullivan. It's a misdirection play on your part. It's, we're dealing with very devious tactics. Bailey, it's hard to make him look good, but contrasting him against Irvin makes him look good. Bailey's for 1% audits. That equals, I don't care about your vote. That's stealing your vote. I encourage people to look up PACs on IllinoisSunshine.org. I think the real candidate is Rabine. And you refuse to talk about him. You give
That's
an open
true.
Invitation.
That's not true at all.
It's not true. We've had him on the show. We've had him on the show a couple times. Okay. It's not true. It's simply not true.
Maybe
and plus I'm personal.
Maybe I missed it. You know, I don't.
Plus I'm personal friends with Gary Rabine. Plus I'm a member at his club, Bull Valley. But okay, go ahead.
Okay. Oh well, that's why we're talking. I'm happy to be corrected. I'm seriously. I'm open.
Okay.
I think the real danger here is the AG ticket. DeVore is going to get killed in the general election. He has some really disgusting things in his pack, and he's not for election integrity. He's caught on tape. I confronted him directly. And rather than saying, like, we're talking now, you know, Jennifer, you had that out of context. You're wrong. This is what I was talking about. I had a bad night. No, he attacked me. He's really bothered by people talking about the integrity of our election system, and that is disturbing. Dave Shistokas is his opponent. And, I'm sorry?
Well, I don't know about Tom DeVore and his position on election integrity. I do know Darren Bailey because this isn't the first time that I've supported him. I supported him when he ran first for state rep against David Rice.
And look
Rice.
Who he's funded by, Dan. He's funded by the same rhino.
Can I finish? when he ran against David Rice, an incumbent state rep who had voted for the Rauner tax increase, and he won that primary.
Okay,
and,
but he's taking money from the same rhino feeders as Rauner. I'm tired of losing. I got a lot of graceful losing, happy with losing and talking about the problem and not really talking about who are these rhino feeders.
Uh-huh. So he's supported by Dick Uihlein, who also supports the independent.
Right,
PAC,
and he supports
the PAC that I support.
Kevin,
the PAC that
right,
I run, I should say.
Kevin Nicholson, who's, you know, look at them. Talk to people in Wisconsin about Kevin Nicholson, who's funded by Dick Uihlein.
Well, there's Dick.
They're not happy with him.
Yeah. Okay, Jennifer. Thanks for the call. There's differences of opinion. We can talk about Nicholson versus Clayfish in Wisconsin too. Point is this. First of all, Bailey doesn't just look good against Irvin. He looks good against Pritzker because elections are about contrasts, mm-hmm. not impersonation. If you want to win as a conservative reformer in Illinois or any other swing state, much less blue state, you think, oh, we have to mimic because we have no chance. No, in point of fact, in a state where 85% of the people think it's on the wrong track, you have to present clear and distinct contrast to have a chance. And I'm not saying it's not uphill. It's uphill for whoever the nominee is, as I've said myriad times, but the only way you win is to chart an alternative vision and course. And by the way, Bailey's value proposition, quite simply, is he stood up when no one else would. And isn't that what conservatives, including, I assume, Jennifer from Lena, isn't that what you want? Isn't that what we've lacked? He stood up against David Rice and went against a Rauner tax raiser in a primary for state rep because tax raisers are driving people out of the state. In point of fact, it's the number one reason why people say they want to leave Illinois, the confiscatory tax burden. Number two, when it was time to stand up during the lockdowns and school shutdowns, it was Darren Bailey and, frankly, Tom DeVore who litigated both of those matters. Much to the chagrin of the bipartisan combine, the political ruling class in Springfield. So nobody is Jesus Christ, and everybody has their imperfections and their foibles, and there's going to be disagreements. But if you could, you know, not miss the forest for the twigs, at least in my estimation, when you stand up when you should stand up is something that we have been lacking in the Republican Party in Illinois generally for generations. Cowardice across the board, cravenness, complicity with the rent-seeking kleptocrats in Chicago. And Bailey represents a break from that. So you don't like his southern twang, or you don't like he's a farmer, or he's not strident enough on whatever you want done in the interest of election integrity, like he's an opponent of election integrity, hardly. Or you want to believe this nonsense that's being bandied about by the Irvin people where they're lying. They're lying to you. Right. Forget lying about Bailey. They're perpetrating a fraud on you. Then go ahead. I'm giving you my view on why. You want to know why I do the things I do? You know, why I'm supporting Bailey? Why I agree to do this independent expenditure pack in support of him? That's why. It's not because I don't like Gary Rabine. I think Gary Rabine is a great guy. I think he's a great human being.
He's a wonderful human being, but I don't think he's ready for the job.
He's a good businessman. I like him. I haven't said a bad word about Gary Rabine, and I won't about him personally.
No.
His campaign is a different story. But you're right. It's about the man for the job in the moment. And to me, it's Bailey. Okay. Jim Hinsdale, home of the Furies. Furries, excuse me. Hey, Jim.
Hi, good morning. Thank you both. I wanted to thank you for the phone or the opportunity to wish you a happy birthday. It's my birthday as well.
Well, right back at you then.
Thank you. Just wanted to throw this out real quick. I think the Great Society is, we're reaping the benefits of the Lyndon Johnson Great Society based on the giveaways were instituted by Johnson then. It was the Vietnam War was going crazy, so it was, don't look here, let's give this away. So I think we're reaping the benefits, or not the benefits, but the result of all that craziness, and just my thought.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Jim. Roger, Southside.
Hey, Dan. Welcome to the club, by the way. Happy birthday. Two things. I'll make them fast. Just going back on the Somalia thing, I don't want to talk about the whole case. Was he was released from Cook County Jail because of why? Our appellate court here in Illinois?
No, because Kim Fox dropped the charges originally.
Okay.
Well, no, but you're talking about release, awaiting sentencing because he's appealing. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So this hasn't been brought up on any, even on our side, or obviously not the media, Chicago media. You know, not too much gets done on the Illinois appellate court without Ann Burke being involved in it. And that's just the way it is. You know, and she gets a free pass all the time. You know, obviously, don't take this the wrong way, Amy, because she's a woman and she's, you know, she's a Burke.
I think it's more that she's a Burke than she's a woman.
Yeah.
Ed Burke got a pass. Chick to chick. Yeah.
Ed Burke got a pass for 50 years, too. Yeah. Right.
I think it was more than that. No, he got $50
million. Well, yeah. Thanks for the call, Roger. Ryan, New Lenox.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call. Happy birthday, Dan.
Thank you.
I'm just a little bit concerned about this. I mean, I'm more than a little bit concerned about the state of Illinois, but with the gubernatorial primary, Jeannie Ives, who I supported and voted for back in 2018, had enough of an uphill battle running against one establishment combine Republican. Now you've got Darren Bailey running against two well-funded bipartisan combine Republican or quote-unquote Republicans in Richard Ervin and then in Jesse Sullivan. And you also have Gary Rabine kind of peeling off some of the like-minded people, which you know, because you, I mean, people on this show go back and forth with you, Dan, on and supporting Bailey, which I do as well. But so I'm just, I don't know, I'm finding myself losing hope at this stage, and wondered if that was silly at this stage with
losing
how
hope.
Uphill
losing,
of a battle, it seems to me that
losing hope has. Losing hope for what?
That he's able to pull it out and get the nomination in this crowded field.
Thanks for the call, Ryan. I mean, we mentioned earlier in the show, Marian Ahern, NBC5 political reporter, tweeted out some survey results she got her hands on. It's 27 Ervin, 25 Bailey. It's a statistical dead heat. It is a statistical dead heat between those two. And then Sullivan, and then Rabine and Schimm.
Don't let any ward committee men tell you otherwise.
Yeah, so no. I mean, Darren Bailey is the most accomplished conservative reform candidate in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody understands that, then he wins going away. That's the bottom line. So I would be far from losing hope in Bailey. I would say that despite being outspent 40-1 so far, Bailey has the inside track to the nomination. We'll see how it plays out. Eduardo, Midway.
Yeah, happy birthday, Dan. I wanted to mention Daniel Martinez. He was a Marine. He was killed in Boston. Around St. Patrick's Day from a bouncer. He used a knife.
Yeah.
So that was pretty sad.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, thank you for mentioning him. It was senseless killing. And that bouncer has been charged with that Marine's murder. We better close it out with Chuck and Delavan.
Hey, happy birthday, buddy. You're going to that thing tonight, so you won't be able to, but you can come on up maybe next week if you want to schedule something. I'll take you out for dinner. My girlfriend, she quit her job working in Waukesha. She's over at Jonathan's now, a real fancy place. It's really good, Zin Delvin. I just wanted to say happy everything to you and wish you well and many, many more birthdays.
Thank you so much, Chuck. I appreciate that. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.